call them knights, call them sentinels if you like. They're all that and more. And so elite is this priesthood that only about 500 who ever served thus are alive today. So, behold the dedication of such a man. Throughout his novitiate, he lives in a chamber under the ground where he meditates and studies, because one day he'll be called upon to recite a long and detailed catechism by heart. He may walk among us, but he may not speak to others, nor may he drink alcohol, nor may he watch television. He must focus, you see, day and night on the responsibility which he has accepted and on the honor of the order he serves. Indeed, even after he has left the order, he will wear a wreath-shaped insignia for the remainder of his life, an emblem of his devotion. He must spend 5 hours each day preparing his vestments for the solemn sacrament he conducts. 5 hours each day. Few will meet the rigid requirements of those merely aspiring to do what he does. For example, shorter than 5 feet 10, taller than 6 feet 4, he's turned away. The ritual he performs, all of it on sacred ground, is exacting as no other, profoundly symbolic. 21 paces from one point to the next, 21 seconds hesitation before returning, and on, and the ritual is repeated around the clock, each and every day of the year, around the clock. And for one who has taken on such a commitment, he gives no less than 2 years of his life. The order itself has been established for roughly a century. For more than half a century, its devotees, all of them, have come from the same place, a solitary location in Virginia called Fort Myer. Fort Myer, because the 3rd United States Infantry, and only the 3rd Infantry, may nurture the chosen few. After they are chosen, and while they are in training, they must live in an underground barracks, under a grave in which lies the one they honor, whose name no one knows. That's right. These priests, these knights, these elite and silent sentinels who prepare their vestments, their uniforms with such meticulous care, they conduct their cherished sacrament, they perform their solemn duty outdoors every day, and at least once in a hurricane. And the 21 paces, the 21 second pause, evokes the ultimate military honor, the 21 gun salute, because the order of the honored grave, the exclusive society whose members must uphold its dignity forever after, is dedicated to one objective, one mission, to guard that grave now and evermore. You may have visited Arlington National Cemetery. You may have witnessed that commitment to the sanctity of the tomb of the unknown soldier. Only now, probably for the first time, now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, history, our community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Megan Barth. She's the executive director of executive editor of the California Globe. We're going to talk about the latest on voter fraud and counting incompetence in California, the current state of play in statewide elections. Unfortunately, we may have won one, but we may have lost another. Megan's going to give us the latest update, and tech theft in Newport Beach, another interesting story that Megan has covered, and all kinds of other national politics and news. Megan, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Hi, Barry. Thanks so much for having me back.
It's great having you. Folks, you can call in and with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Megan, I realized after you were on for the half-hour segment about a month or so ago, I realized that I probably rushed you through way too much content, which is why I'm so happy that you could spend a whole hour with us today. Just take a minute or two giving our listeners again a bit of your background, because you've really been doing journalism and reporting and political reporting in particular for quite some time.
Yeah, when I add up the years, I always surprise myself. But I've been in the political game since about 2008. Prior to that, I was in the medical business, specifically vaccines and biotherapeutics, for about 20 years. So Obamacare really got me off my couch. I, of course, was fighting against it. I was working with a large medical device manufacturers and pharmaceutical manufacturers, and they were against it, and it was going to hurt my clients as well as hurt the country. And yes, I was right. But then after I cut my teeth in that career, I'd always loved to write. I'm an English major, and so I picked up a pen and started writing, and my writing was picked up nationally. And then I also started doing reporting on local and national politics, worked undercover as an investigative reporter during COVID, during the election, the 2020 election, and prior to that, saw a lot of things that you can't unsee. And so I've been really an election hawk for quite some time, because I did live in California from 1996 to 2015 in Southern California, and then I became a California refugee in June of 2015 and thought I was moving to a bright red state called Nevada, and boy, was I wrong. So I started uncovering a lot of anomalies within our voter rolls. And unfortunately, in 2016 and 18, the Democrats seized control of the legislature. They seized control of the governorship in Nevada, and they changed all of our voting laws. They really modeled Nevada's voting laws after California's voting laws during the pandemic. So what we saw, not only in California, but also Nevada and across the nation, was that safeguards were absolutely eliminated in the election process and in election law, and it was replaced by mail-in balloting, for example. So I often say, Barry, that what used to be illegal has now been made legal by the law. So Democrats drafted and passed laws that made illegal activities related to voting now legal. And one good example of that is ballot harvesting, mail-in balloting, reduced voter ID or no voter ID at all in order to vote. And what we're told continuously by Democrats is that all of these changes were somehow going to increase participation. Well, as a matter of fact, that hasn't happened. Voting participation has not increased. But what has increased is the amount of time it takes now Democrats to count the votes. And it also has increased Democratic representation after Election Day, because wouldn't you know it, Democrats always win an election after Election Day. And we saw this very clearly in the 2024 election. When a handful, I think it was like five or six Democrats, took congressional seats from leading Republicans throughout California. So always when you see the late mail-in ballots come in, or the ballots that were dropped off in drop boxes and ballot harvested, 90% of the time, the Democrats win, because it seems like all the Democrat ballots are held until the end to be counted, or the statistical anomaly presents itself that says, geez, out of 100,000 ballots, how did Spencer Pratt get two votes?
Yeah.
You know? So there's stuff like that. And so all of this manipulation of election laws, specifically done by Democrats and Mark Elias, for example, the lawyer, all these changes to election laws has not increased voter participation. It's actually fueled voter speculation, and it has fueled a lack of confidence in our elections.
Yeah, you know, I was going through all your articles and reading some other stuff, and I, you know, it occurred to me that really with all of these Democrat changes in the voting system over the last 20 years or so, that we're really seeing the features of the system, not the bugs. These are built-in features to give them control of the vote, correct?
Correct. That's a very simple way of saying it.
Yeah. I mean, what it's Stalin said back in the 1920s, it doesn't make any difference who votes and who counts the votes.
Correct. And that's exactly what I said on the John Cobalt radio show last week. And I, you know, he asked me if I thought Spencer Pratt would pull it out. And I said, look, the system has been designed against him. It doesn't matter who counts the votes, it doesn't matter who votes, it matters who counts the votes. And he had a little chuckle, but it's exactly right. When you eliminate safeguards from a process, I mean, I used to be in medical manufacturing engineering, okay? That was my background for 23 years. You know, I was in the manufacturing side. And so whenever we had a process, I usually compare it to this. When you have a process, if you change that process, then you must revalidate the process to ensure that you are still getting a 99.9% return rate, right? That's never happened. We've never tested all of these changes. We've never validated all of these changes. They just say, well, there's no widespread fraud. Well, how do you know? Democrats used to say, voter fraud is a myth. Do you remember that? I had people tell me that all the time. Democrats, voter fraud is a myth. Well, then all of a sudden the narrative changed to, well, there's not enough fraud to affect the outcome. It's not widespread. You know, the voter fraud isn't widespread. Well, how did it go from it's a myth to not widespread in just a matter of months?
Yeah. It's really quite discouraging. I was on a panel yesterday with Stacey Korsgaden, who was one of the candidates for insurance commissioner. And, unfortunately, I think she came in third, and she's actually an insurance agent by training, and would have been one of the first people to ever be an insurance commissioner in California who knew about insurance, anything about insurance. And you know the kind of fire insurance issues we're having here, and I think you are as well in Nevada. But, I mean, it's just discouraging that she, you know, spent a lot of money and time, and I'm not sure she actually got a fair shake from the process.
Well, and I think the process not only does discourage good people to run for office, you know, and I don't know Stacey, but discouraging from what you said, it may discourage her from trying to run again because the system has been designed really against a first-time candidate, right? And it's really tailored to, the system is specifically designed to protect the status quo.
And all of this, I mean, all of this just, I think, magnifies the problems in the jungle primary system that, again, the Democrats pushed on us. And the fact that, you really, in my perception, the state Republican Party, the California Republican Party, is basically a non-player. So there's, on the Republican side here in California, it seems to become a circular firing squad on the Republican side in many of these races.
Well, and if you look at ballot harvesting, for example, that the Democrats unilaterally passed in Nevada, and I think the same perhaps was done in California, I think 10 years ago, ballot harvesting used to be whereby, you were in a nursing home and you had your granddaughter be notarized to pick up your ballot and deliver it.
Right.
And that's when we, that's when we had in-person voting and perhaps early voting at the time. Now, even that notary step has been completely removed. And so Democrats were smart enough and cunning enough to pass universal mail balloting along with universal ballot harvesting. And the universal ballot harvesting, they already have the infrastructure worked into their party. They have the unions. They have the NGOs that will use their resources to mass harvest ballots. The Republican Party simply did not have that until really recently with the genesis of Turning Point USA. you know, we have Turning Point USA playing in Nevada. They just opened an office down in Clark County where Las Vegas is, but they're also working on behalf of a outsider candidate in northern Nevada against a longtime legislature and rancher. And so they have that infrastructure just for that one specific race and races down in Clark County, but it does not match the power of the ballot harvesting infrastructure that the Democrats have in their back pocket.
Yep. So in the last week, you've written some really great articles on the Globe, and I hope everybody goes back and looks at these. But I'm going to let you kind of summarize them and wrap the various themes. But there was one regarding the massive number of, 900,000 or so ballots that are out there that are getting mailed out to people that don't exist here in California anymore. Basically, California's election system has become third world. And now you've got, the DOJ, the Justice Department, U.S. Justice Department, investigating all this. So how does all this fit in together, and what do you expect to have happen? What do you expect anything from the DOJ investigations and on any of this?
Yeah, so let me just kind of take you over just a few of the one specifically, the ghost voters, and that's what we call ghost voters.
Right.
And Judicial Watch is now suing Shirley Weber and the state of California, SOS Shirley Weber and the state of California, because they found through their own investigation that there are 873,000 ghost voters on the California voter rolls. Now, what do I mean by ghost voters? Well, these are voters who have been inactive for at least two or three consecutive federal elections. That's roughly, 6 years? There are another 151,000 that have been inactive for 8 years. There's another 35,000 or so that have been active for five or more years. So you have an enormous amount of inactivated voters to the tune of over 800,000, nearly 900,000, quite frankly, on California's voter rolls. Now, all of these people should have been removed years ago, and they have never been removed, which is a huge red flag that the DOJ and anybody with an IQ of more than, 90 can understand that when you have inactive voters on a universal mail-in ballot list, those inactive voters are going to get ballots when they should not get ballots. Those voters should have been removed according not just to state law, but to federal law, and that's the Help America Vote Act. So you have Don Wagner, who's running for Secretary of State, who lost. He is the plaintiff in that case. The case is represented by Judicial Watch. And so, 870-plus thousand names should have been removed, should not have gotten ballots for this primary election or even past elections, because some of these voters have been on the rolls since 2016, now or prior. In response to this, and added to this, is the DOJ. And the DOJ said, hey, we want to audit your voter rolls. We want to ensure that there are no dead voters, that there are no inactive voters, that there are no non-citizens on the voter rolls. We want to audit. And California, along with Nevada, said, no, go pound sand. And the reason they said that, according to them, is that there is protected voter data, and it would be a breach of the voters' privacy if they would share something like a Social Security number with the DOJ. Well, excuse me, Barry, but the federal government assigns you the Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no privacy breach. The entity that wants and has legal authority to audit the rolls already has, quote-unquote, protected voter data information, because the entity known as the federal government prescribed that number to the voter. So it doesn't really, the defense by Democrats doesn't hold water, and quite frankly doesn't pass the smell test.
Yep.
So we have
a caller. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your comment or question for Megan?
Hi, Megan. I'm involved with a local government watchdog group, and we have a weekly newsletter. I include your articles probably three or four times a month, so we really enjoy your writing and the Globes. But my question for you is that, you know, anytime people start pointing out all these problems that exist with the voter rolls, with the system, they start talking about the potential for fraud, they're kind of written off as kooks. And before we can really hope to get any change, I think we're going to have to change that public perception. And I don't know how we go about doing that. Just wondering what you think about how to get the people engaged with this issue.
And what watchdog group are you with, if I can ask? I'll subscribe to the letter.
it's called CoLab. It's a Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business.
And Katie was the speaker at the last annual dinner. So, hi, Greg.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Hi, Barry.
That's fantastic. I've heard great things about your group, and thank you for the question. You know, I believe people understand numbers, okay, and data doesn't lie, politicians do. I always say that. So when you have 873,000 voters that should not be on the voter roll, that gets someone's attention. These numbers aren't, and I'm always very wary to say there's voter fraud, right? Well, because the fraud's already been baked into the statute, right? So you can't necessarily remove the claims of fraud unless you remove the statute. So the numbers are very important. I also think that this election, this primary election, specifically in LA City Council, and then add to that the gubernatorial election, has really exposed kind of the wild west of elections in California. I think you have many, many people that, for example, Ro Khanna today, and I'll be writing about this, Ro Khanna tweeted out that many of his Democratic friends voted for Spencer Pratt and are now dropping or changing their registration altogether because they are so disenchanted with what they witnessed in the LA City Council.
Wow. Hey, I hear the bumper music. Megan, I'm going to put you on hold. And Greg, thanks for calling. We'll talk soon.
Sure, thank you.
Folks, we'll be right back with Megan and want to get the latest on her thoughts on the mayor's race in Los Angeles and the governor's race. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Kevin Uretsky. A jury in Texas has found teenager Carmelo Anthony guilty of murder in the fatal stabbing of 17-year-old Austin Metcalf in April of 2025 during a track and field meet in Frisco outside of Dallas after the two got into an argument. Anthony admits to stabbing Metcalf but says it was in self-defense. That murder charge carries a maximum of life in prison. President Trump says Iran is responsible for shooting down a U.S. Apache attack helicopter near the Strait of Hormuz. Both crew members were rescued.
In a social media post, President Trump says the U.S., out of necessity, must respond to this attack. He did not detail what the U.S. response will be. The potential escalation comes just hours after President Trump expressed optimism a deal to end the war could be signed in the next 2 or 3 days.
Fox's Jared Halpern at the White House. This is a Fox News alert.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Megan Barth, Executive Director of the California Globe. Please call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Megan, let's do a quick rundown of where the governor's race here in California stands. I mean, it looks like Hilton is hanging on to the number two spot. I bet there's going to probably be another vote dump today. What's expected here?
Well, and this adds to the absurdity. And what I mean by that is that we were told that it could take a month to count the election. You guys count the ballots up to a month after Election Day. So I think it's like July 6th, right, where you have the time to cure and tabulate the ballots. Well, why are we already making all of these announcements? I don't understand. If every vote must be counted, then why aren't we waiting until every vote is counted? We can give a running total, that's fine, but we're already calling races, which I don't really agree with, nor do I understand. With that said, President Trump went on Truth Social the other day and thinks that Steve Hilton might have a chance of losing the second spot based to all the chicanery that happened in L.A. County and elsewhere. You know, Spencer Pratt was doing extraordinarily well, yet they called the race against him because Nithya Raman, the socialist council member, you know, she's getting 60-70% of the late ballots. And so this is the same thing. Who says that the same thing can't happen to Steve Hilton? So right now it looks that Javier Becerra is in first. Steve Hilton is holding on narrowly to second. And Tom Steyer may make late gains, but he's closing in to Hilton's second place. And if he surpasses Hilton, then once again you'll have two Democrats at the top of the ticket based on the jungle primary.
Yeah. And really it looks like, I mean, is Spencer Pratt going to do anything to contest this vote count in Los Angeles, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. You know, from what I've read on his social media, where he's very active on Twitter, or X now, you know, he just basically said it's not over till it's over, and truly it's not over until the first week of July.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess we're just going to have to hang on and see how this all develops. One last quick question on what happened in California, and I want to move on to some national politics. There was an article yesterday, I believe, in the Real Clear Politics website that Newsom's Prop 50 gerrymander may not have worked out as well as he had hoped. Have you been tracking on that and see what happened in those congressional districts?
Yeah, a little bit. And I wrote about this, actually, and I'll just grab it really quick. It was about Adam Gray, and the district is at 31. It's not in front of me, and forgive me, or is it 13? But it's Adam Gray's district. I'll pull that up really quick.
Yeah.
Based on the, just in general, okay, based on how California's, specifically Republican districts, were sliced and diced like a Thanksgiving turkey and brought in, you know, a huge, significant Democratic advantages, we're talking, and the same thing happened in Nevada, okay, but the, you know, for example, in Adam Gray's district, which was always very, against Duarte, right, they went back and forth, and it was hundreds of votes, and they were going back and forth. Well, that was gerrymandered by Prop 50 from a +5 Republican advantage to a +5 Democratic, or a 0.5 Democratic advantage. Well, you know, Adam Gray and others, they should be outperforming what the polls and what the vote counts are because of that gerrymandering, and they simply aren't getting the percentages that you would expect from Prop 50.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting to see. I also heard that Kevin Kiley is hanging in there. He became an independent to run again for Congress, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so, okay. So I guess we're just going to have to see when these votes all come in. Let's shift to national politics. It's hard to avert your eyes from what's going on the national level. In Rules for Radicals, Saul Alinsky urged his radicals to accuse opponents of what they're known to do. Today, anybody who's not a progressive, I guess that probably includes you and I, are Nazis or fascists. What do you make of this whole Graham Plattner race in Maine, and I mean it seems to me this is emblematic of the Democrat Party.
Well, it certainly tells you a lot when Ro Khanna flies out to Maine to do a fundraiser rah-rah rally for a dude who is accused of multiple extramarital affairs. We don't know if any of them were underage, but he was using Kik, which is a platform that oftentimes men of less desirable reputations use, let's just put it that way. He has a Nazi tattoo on his chest. He has made pro-communist, pro-socialist statements, anti-American statements on Reddit, and the list goes on and on. And what Ro Khanna tells us, is, along with other prominent Democrats, is that you must elect the abuser, Nazi tattoo-sporting, communist, anti-American dude in order to protect Democrats' power or to strip power from the Republican Senate. So the Democrats are totally fine with Nazis in Congress. It just has to be their Nazis.
God. I'm sorry I'm laughing. I mean, it's just incredible.
It's absurd. It's the theater of the absurd, but it also reveals who the Democrat Party is. I've always said they're never moored in principle. They are moored in power because they don't say rest in peace when someone passes. No, they say rest in power. So they are all about power. It's not about principles. It was never about, they knew we weren't Nazis. They knew it.
Right.
They knew we weren't, you know, racists. But using supercharged emotional language to demonize your opponent is a typical tactic, especially in politics. But along that, I have to add, the Southern Poverty Law Center was actually paying actual Nazis to go and create mayhem and protest around the country.
Yep.
But yet, like I said, the Democrats are willing to elect a Nazi as long as it's their Nazi. And that's only to protect their power.
So I mean, you know, for forever, really, we've viewed the United States as a center-right country, basically. You know, fairly conservative still in the main. But when you look at the national political picture, because of everybody moving to different states, you know, where they think they're going to be more welcome politically and more welcome from a business perspective or whatever it is, everything's really getting totally polarized, isn't it, from state to state?
Well, and purposely so, because our elections have gotten so polarized through the demonization of your political opponent. You know, no longer are we having these robust debates on the battle of ideas, not even at the local level. It's very hard to find local level debates where, you know, voters can then decide, you know, which person running for Congress or which person running for Assembly or State Senate has better ideas that they align. It's more just the politics of personal destruction, which has been going on for as long as I've been paying attention to politics. However, it is really, it's now become violent. And the political violence is not only being tolerated to some extent, it is being encouraged and it's being celebrated. And we can see this specifically. And it's not that, you know, Republicans are storming softball fields trying to murder a bunch of Democratic congressmen just wanting to play baseball. It's not Republicans who are going onto college campuses and assassinating leading Democratic voices like they did with Charlie Kirk. It's not Republicans celebrating the death of a Democrat, whether that be Ruth Bader Ginsburg or whoever. It is specifically Democrats, and yet they want to tell us somehow calling Republicans Nazis for the last 2, 3, 4 election cycles has somehow toned down the violence. You know, their rhetoric directly contributes to political violence. And what we have are dark money groups, to use the Democratic terms, the lingo, dark money groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, like the NGOs, like Antifa, like the other, those who gathered around Brett Kavanaugh's home and sent death threats to Justice Kavanaugh before he was confirmed. These are specific violent tactics of the left. And it's not that the left has changed. It's that the left has been hijacked by the very radicals it once rejected.
Yep. You know who really surprise me? You mentioned his name, Congressman Ro Khanna, who's, you know, up in Silicon Valley. I mean, it seemed to me he was trying to position himself, A, as a moderate in the party, and B, I mean, I think he was even thinking of running for president, you know, or getting involved in, you know, bigger things for himself. He seems to have taken the Kool-Aid, you know, on this Graham Platner thing.
Well, most leading Democrats have drunk, as far as from a position of leadership or power within the Democratic apparatus, most leading Democrats, whether that's Hakeem Jeffries or others, are rallying behind Graham Plantner because supposedly Susan Collins just isn't radical enough. They say she's too moderate or she votes with Trump too many times. So therefore, they need a Nazi to straighten everything out.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully Susan Collins can hang on. Let me ask you another question. What do you make of the Trump endorsement near sweep in the primaries? Do you think that has any significance, or do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that the Republicans may not have a more moderate bench out there that's running in the general election on the congressional side than the Senate side?
Well, my question is, what is moderate in today's terms?
Yeah, well, right. Yeah.
I mean, we seem to have pro-Americans and anti-Americans. So, you know, what's in the middle of that?
Right.
Kind of American? I don't know what a moderate means anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that Trump, you know, he's obviously just knocking him out of the park, right? He's, you know, 37 for 37. Mm-hmm. However, in northern Nevada, which you're just a few hours away from, there is a big congressional race here where the incumbent resigned early, Congressman Mark Amaday, from Congressional District 2, which covers half the state of Nevada. It's the largest, I think, congressional district in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's half the state of Nevada, and President Trump endorsed somebody that northern Nevadans didn't even know. His name is Dave Filippo, and Mark Amaday endorsed James Settlemyer. Now, why is this important? James Settlemyer is a fourth-generation rancher in northern Nevada. He was a former Nevada lawmaker, Republican. Dave Filippo lives in Las Vegas. He doesn't even live in the county. He's renting a house up here, and President Trump was supposed to not endorse, and he endorsed, and I'll tell you, that endorsement shook the entire district. No one expected it at all, and I've talked to hundreds of people. And so that's a race to watch to see if President Trump's endorsement holds, because it's going to be, I think, a very tight race up here between a fourth-generation rancher who knows the land better than and the topography better than anybody else on any ticket, compared to what they call a carpetbagger from Las Vegas, but President Trump endorsed.
So, did Trump have a reason for doing this, or did he just? What's the backstory here? Did Amadeo or whatever? I think I got the name right. Did he not do something that Trump didn't? Did he do something that Trump was not happy with?
Yeah, there's a couple rumors. So the one rumor is that Trump was no fan of Congressman Amaday because of some of Amaday's votes. I guess you could call Amaday more of a moderate. But then you have Filippo, who was endorsed by everybody outside the state of Nevada that, you know, of prominence. Paul Gosar out of Arizona, Sheriff Arpaio out of Arizona, Turning Point out of Arizona. And with President Trump's alignment with some of the MAGA-aligned officials or candidates, especially TPUSA as well, that perhaps influenced his vote. So it's not really clear, but I think probably a combination of those two reasons his dislike for Amaday on certain issues and his allegiance or at least closeness with TPUSA and others may have influenced President Trump's endorsement.
I see. So any other races we should be watching? Because the primary is it today, right, in Nevada?
Yeah, it's today, and I'm sorry to report that I never received my mail-in ballot. Yes, of all the people for them to mess up on, probably shouldn't have been me. I even gave them a second chance, and they said, well, would you like us to deactivate this ballot and send you another ballot? I said, sure, let's try it again. Didn't receive the second ballot.
Yeah.
So I drove up to what would normally be my precinct. Remember when we had precinct voting and we always had results on election night?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it wasn't too long ago.
Yep.
It worked like a charm, even before the advent of the internet. It was amazing how that worked. But Democrats had to change it. So I am going to go vote in person, and I did see some long lines at a pretty rural voting location. So I'm going to, after we hang up here, I'm going to scoot over and see if I can cast my ballot in person. And I think the races, this CD2 race, Northern Nevada race, I think is one to watch because of Trump's endorsement to see if he holds on. I also think that the gubernatorial race in Nevada is extraordinarily important. And for, you know, we have a lot of visitors from California, and we have a lot of new residents that have moved here from California. And the good news is that more Republicans are moving from California into Nevada than are Democrats. So I'm very happy about that. We welcome the Republicans with open arms. We don't want our state changed. And we don't certainly want to mimic California any more than the Democratic legislators here choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor Lombardo is our stop. Like, he is our protection against California policies. Well, so that gubernatorial race is very important as well.
And so he's up for re-election, right?
Yeah, he'll be likely running against Aaron Ford, who's our attorney general, who believes that voter ID is unconstitutional.
Ah, okay. Yeah, you've covered that story.
Legal chops.
Yeah, you've covered that story. So yeah, Nevada's on the brink here.
We are.
A couple more questions here. Do you think, I think a big story is all this Medicaid and Medicare fraud and all the investigations. I mean, do you see this as having any impact on the elections? You were involved in the medical care industry for many years. I mean, when you said a lot of the chickens are coming home to roost on what was happening back in the early 2000s with healthcare in the United States. Do you see this having much impact on the elections?
Yeah, I think, like I said to Greg from CoLab, you know, people see these numbers and it doesn't leave them.
Right.
It basically tattoos their brain. They don't forget that nearly 900,000 people shouldn't be on the voter rolls. They don't forget that Medicaid fraud, you know, in California is, you know, could be $100 billion. So it's all of this bubbling to the top that has been buried under layers and layers of bureaucracy or complicity that is now starting to come to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these headlines related to the massive amounts of fraud, which, Barry, I'll just add here. So we have Medicaid fraud, homelessness fraud, SNAP fraud, healthcare fraud, hospice fraud, DMV fraud, ghost student fraud, meaning we have ghost students, but we definitely don't have voter fraud.
Right, right.
I mean, that's what we're supposed to believe. But when these numbers start coming in to the tune of billions and billions, and I would say trillions of dollars, people don't forget that, because we're already, because of the pandemic and because of the war in Iran and the conflict in Iran, our dollar is going so much further left. So people are trying to hold on to more. And
right.
Some of us work two jobs.
Yep.
So when they see they're getting ripped off, the biggest motivator outside of fear to get to the polls is anger.
There you go.
Whoever can capture that will win.
All right. I'm going to put you on hold one last time, Megan. So stand by. And folks, when we're back, when we get back, we'll be talking to Megan about a couple more stories that I find fascinating and that she's been covering as well. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. A choppy trading session with the major averages finishing mixed and reversing course from earlier gains. Chip stocks leading the sell-off as the AI trade unwinds amid growing concerns that chronic inflation could lead the Fed to raise interest rates later this year. The declines come ahead of Wednesday's Consumer Price Index report, which will give investors clues over how policymakers may react at its next meeting in June. 9 of the 11 S&P 500 sectors were higher, with healthcare and industrials the best performers, while tech and energy lagged. Oil prices eased, cushioning today's losses. The Dow winners, Home Depot, American Express, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow decliners, Goldman Sachs, Apple, and Microsoft. The Dow rising 86 points, the Nasdaq down by 251, S&P 500 lower by 19. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you, would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Megan Barth, executive editor of the California Globe. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show is going to feature Eric Olson of the Central Coast Distillery in Atascadero. This is one of my new favorite places, and it's really an unusual place, and he's got a lot of great events and things going on there, and I want to introduce him to the listeners because he's terrific. And then two people you all know very well, Jenny Griniger and Rebecca Kosnick, both school board members on the Templeton and Atascadero school boards, and we're going to be talking about the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the problems that they've been causing organizations like Moms for Liberty and other things, boys and girls sports, and all the things that we talk about when they come on. One last quick thing. RP Slow is having a barbecue on June 28th in Templeton Park for the 250th year anniversary as a country. And Eric Gorham's going to be barbecuing. So buy tickets, go to the RP Slow website and buy tickets. Okay, there are two stories I got to get your take on, Megan, before we go. We got about 5 minutes left. First, and I'm just going to throw them out to you so you can take them in this order. California has passed California Assembly has passed AB 2624, which is euphemistically referred to as the Stop Nick Shirley Act. He's, of course, the undercover reporter that exposed a lot of this fraud. And then you covered a very interesting story about an Iranian guy down in Newport Beach who was trafficking high-tech stuff to Iran. So I'm interested in your opinion after I just found out you did undercover work as a reporter. I'm interested in your opinion on the Nick Shirley Act, and then tell us a little bit about this story in Newport Beach.
No problem. So yes, I worked undercover for quite some time, and it's amazing what people will tell you when you don't think that you're listening to them or recording them.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Shirley has exposed a lot, and undercover reporting is the original reporting. It's gumshoe reporting. It's doing the work that not many people like to do, but it uncovers the fraud that you're really looking for, or the facts, really, that you're looking for that have been buried. And so for the Democrats to take it upon themselves, specifically the wife of, is it Bonta, the Attorney General,
mm-hmm.
to draft this legislation, AB 2624, and get it passed is chilling to me, quite frankly, because what you're doing is you are limiting the access to the press, as California Democrats have consistently and chronically done for decades. I mean, if you remember, Katie Grimes was not allowed into the legislature because Jerry Brown didn't like her, and she had a them, and she won. California Democrats like to operate in the dark because they don't want the exposure.
Mm-hmm.
This bill is chilling, and we'll see what happens to it because I'm sure there will be a lawsuit.
Are media outlets doing anything to lobby against it up there in Sacramento?
I personally have not seen that, but I think the few media outlets that I have seen are concerned, but I haven't seen any lobbying per se.
Mm, okay.
But again, you have the media. The mainstream media does not necessarily do investigative reporting. We're seeing a little bit from CBS now under Barry Weiss. We're seeing a little bit of investigative reporting under Barry Weiss. But in general, the mainstream media just takes whatever the Democrat says and republishes it and never challenges it. With the Iranian dual national, so this guy was living in a $35 million mansion in Newport Coast, which is adjacent to Newport Beach, in Southern California, and he was basically selling tech equipment and military equipment, supplying technology, rather, to Iran's nuclear and military programs. He referred to Iran as his motherland, right, his homeland. So he certainly wasn't America first, but he referred to Iran and the IGRC as his motherland. Now, he's accused of smuggling technology to the regime in Iran and making, obviously, tens of millions of dollars to do that. So he is under investigation. However, he does have a current charge against him that could end him up in prison should he be found guilty for about 20 years.
So this kind of goes hand in hand with some of these other quote unquote espionage or spy stories of people, the Chinese students or professors that are smuggling in, altered bugs, to ruin crops and all that kind of stuff. I mean, is it evidence that the FBI is doing its job now more than it was doing before Trump came back into office?
I think without a doubt, because you have multiple units within the FBI and some that look specifically at financial crimes, children's crimes, things like that, and so you have various branches of the FBI that are making significant bucks, whether it's just like espionage, fraud, trafficking, human trafficking bucks. So definitely you have to wonder what the hell the FBI was doing for the years prior.
Yeah, no kidding. Megan, thank you so much for spending this much time with us today. And how is the best way for people to follow you?
CaliforniaGlobe.com.
All right. You have a great rest of the week, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you're covering next. So thank you so much.
Very good, Jerry. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Folks, I'll be back next week with another interesting and fun group of guests. So have a great week and enjoy yourselves.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.